This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and you're listening to Property Matters on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio. Te reo, irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu. So lovely to have you here today. It's great to be back in studio, actually. I'm back in studio here at Manawatu People's Radio in Palmerston North. Nice to be home. I do love the quality of the work that they do, and I really do enjoy how nice my voice sounds rather than recording on the road. So nice to be back here, and I'll be back here regularly in studio now with the Property Matters show. So we talk all things property here on Property Matters, and or at least as much as we can fit into this short format. So we're going to go through a few articles that have been in the news recently, just plenty going on, of course. I mentioned in last week's show plenty of proposed changes for tenancy law and the effect that that might have, different viewpoints on that, of course. So many changes in the last 3 or 4 years in that area, it's really quite amazing. And it can be tricky for people to keep on track of, both landlords and tenants, to know what they're supposed to do under certain circumstances. I guess a very good resource for that is the Tenancy Services website. They've really upped their game in recent years, and you can go in there and you can look at flow charts, you can get forms and documents and everything you might need to guide you through landlording or being a tenant. But just to start with, we're going to look at the market, the sales market, if you like. And there was a podcast recently by Tova O'Brien on Stuff about interest rates and mortgage misery. So just to, I guess, paraphrase some of that, she wrote a bit of an article, and she says, before, during, and after last year's election campaign, pretty much all parties appealed to the so-called squeezed middle, the everyday Kiwis doing it tough. But 6 months on, the cost of living crisis continues to bite. Almost all of us are affected, but it's a large chunk of that squeezed middle that we're being focused on for this particular article, specifically the people grappling with monthly bills. Or at least the monthly mortgage bills, she says. So a lot of people might think, lucky them, they've got a mortgage and a house in the first place, and maybe they're right. But that doesn't change the fact that mortgage rates have more than doubled over the past 2 years, and that can mean the difference between just making it and really struggling. In August of 2021, the average one-year fixed rate was 2.6%, and now that same rate sits around 2.6 to 7.3. Those spikes have seen some home loan repayments double. And amid pain at the petrol pump and rising council rates, growing grocery prices and all the rest, some are being forced into tough and in some cases life-changing decisions. People getting behind on their mortgage payments have hit a near four-year high, with nearly 21,000 accounts past due in December, and that's up 21% from the year before. The government promised to help, or promised help for the squeezed middle in its first budget, locked and looming on May the 30th. So the people and the homeowners making those tough decisions, an advisor, money advisor and so forth, all are on the podcast of Tova O'Brien's. You can go and try and find that if you like on stuff.co.nz. Interesting to see the different perspectives on what's happening there. So just go to the Stuff Politics section. That's quite a good listen. Next up. I'm going to be jumping a little bit all over the place today, and hopefully you'll forgive me slightly for that, but we'll go more to some national real estate news, if you like. And this article recently from Jonathan Killick on stuff.co.nz says, Auckland's multi-million dollar slum owner plagued by squatters, he claims. So neighbours of a grotty old home with grass growing out of the gutters and clumps of mould on the walls say they're concerned for tenants' welfare. The owner, Anuj Gupta, acknowledges the property is in poor condition but says the occupants are squatters and he's been trying to get rid of them. The occupants dispute that. They claim they're legitimate tenants and have moved there after living in emergency motels owned by the Gupta family. So the head of a prominent Auckland property investment family disputes claims he's been renting substandard housing to vulnerable tenants, accusing occupants instead of being squatters. So Anuj Gupta manages a property empire largely built up by his father, Guru Raj Gupta, who was a Queen's Service Medal recipient and founder of the Indian Weekender newspaper. So between them and their associated companies, father and son own more than 60 properties, mainly throughout Auckland, as well as motel business and service departments. So according to figures obtained from MSD, they've collected more than $7 million in emergency housing grants since 2020 on top of rent subsidies. Yet some of their properties have been allowed to degrade. An old home on Remuera Road in particular has drawn the criticism of neighbours and tenants alike. When a staff reporter visited a dwelling on the property, clumps of hairy black mould the size of a human fist could be seen on the walls. Now, this article is on Stuff. It's got pictures. Picture I'm looking at the moment is black mould growing on the walls and ceilings of a rented flat. It looks more than disgusting. The tenant, Dave Gravy, said the dwelling wasn't weathertight and he had broken a rib trying to clean mould off the ceilings. The wind comes through the gaps in the windows and if I didn't have a heater in the winter, I would die, he says. He said he was paying $390 a week for the dwelling. It appeared to be at least partially powered by extension cables. In the time he's been there, Gravy said the main house on the property had up to 10 tenants at a time and when staff visited, five were living there. They used a communal washing machine which is kept outdoors in a corrugated iron box. The house has plumbing issues. At one stage, neither of its two toilets were working and all of the tenants were having to use the toilet in Gravy's shack. An Auckland Council spokesperson also confirmed the owners had been served with an abatement notice after a pipe burst causing sewage to flow onto the street. I don't know how people can get away with this. It's awful. A tenant in the main house, Jake Tahu, said that when they used the toilets, it would push sewage up into the shower. Imagine that. He'd been putting disinfectant down the drain to lessen the smell. When you want to take a shower, you'll just try to be quick. It's not an experience you'd wish on anyone. Staff received several calls about the property from neighbours and the iconic Endemion flats next door, although no one would identify themselves. They say the only thing that could be worse than having their views blocked by a big new apartment building is the status quo, because there's going to be a development there. So Guptas have twice made resource consent applications to redevelop the site. It seems obvious they're not wanting to spend any money on it, but that doesn't absolve them from their obligations as landlords. That's just my view there. So back in 2019, an application for 8 apartments was first refused by the council and then approved following an appeal to the Environment Court. But the Guptas have since purchased a second adjacent property and have made an application for a larger development, which is waiting a decision. In the meantime, neighbours say the $2.8 million home has become a slum and attracted problem tenants. It's been a regular topic of discussion at owners' committee meetings. The tenants have a constant flow of people coming in and out of the house, and they also have concerns about rubbish piling up on the site, the state of the roof, which is clumps of grass growing out the gutters. Really shouldn't be legal, the neighbours say, to rent these sort of places out. And it'll be interesting to see what happens there. He could go for a massive skate if he's investigated by the tenancy compliance team. Goes on to say the owner says he's tried disconnecting the water. When approached by staff, Anuj Gupta said he did have concerns for the welfare of the occupants of the Remuera home, but said they were squatters, which is interesting because they say they're paying rent. He said he had been assaulted while trying to evict them. Gupta produced a document he said was an order from the tenancy tribunal to evict the occupants, but he said he had a difficult time getting police to enforce it. He says, obviously I can't go there with a bunch of guys and start pushing them out. I have to follow legal process. He said he and a friend had visited in the middle of the night to try and shut off the utilities. You wouldn't believe it. I got the power turned off and physically cut the water pipe was exposed. These guys managed to have it going again. By the way, as a landlord, don't ever cut off water and power to rental property. Nothing will get you in a huge amount of trouble quicker than withholding services from tenants. That's an extremely serious unlawful act under tenancy law. So is he doing things the right way? Well, no, it certainly sounds not like it. It certainly sounds like an example of a bad tenant. There is a reason why things like Healthy Homes exists. And look, there's possibly two sides to every story, but the pictures that show on this article on Stuff show that the standard is just fairly disgusting there. Doesn't matter if it's emergency housing, the standards still apply. Okay, moving on now to a little bit more about the housing market, and this is by Damien Grant. He says, the housing market's so tightly regulated that we've created a landed gentry. So he's a business owner and he's a contributor to Stuff. So this is an opinion piece. He says, did you know it costs 50% more to build a house here than it does in Australia? I didn't, and I was surprised to see Chris Luxon promising to do something about it last week. I mean, I know his party campaigned on housing affordability, but many of his supporters own property, and if he does something about high house prices, not everyone's going to be pleased. We've successfully regulated our housing market so tightly that only the children of existing homeowners can obtain the finance to purchase property. I was talking to some people about that last night. They say it seems the only way, and these are people like lawyers, mortgage brokers, etc., banks, so on, last night, and they were saying it's just really only really the children of existing home owners that can obtain finance to purchase properties. The last reliable data, which was the 2018 census, that recorded just over 64% lived in owner-occupied homes, which was a fall from the peak of 73% in the 1990s. For comparison, only 56% lived in owner-occupied properties in the aftermath of the Second World War. And the current trend is going the wrong way. Things that have, I guess, stopped people owning land, in the opinion of Damien Grant, is land use restrictions and building regulations. So with land use, the Resource Management Act, or RMA, began life in 1991 as a blueprint for preventing Kiwis doing anything with their land unless it complied with a national environmental plan and had the consent of the local council, and many councils mandated a bit of koha for a sensitivity report. It has expanded and now is a complex book with creative ways to prevent construction. There are rules about what can be built and what cannot, requirements stipulating the Crown and local councils must maintain a local register of those who can exercise kaitiakitanga, and a specification as to the amount of grass any residential unit at ground must have, which is 20% in case you're interested. So the RMA starting position is that you need permission, it's going to be dumped again. So Simon Court, the ACT MP and Undersecretary, with the responsibility for drafting the replacement, has a different outlook. You can do whatever you want with your land as long as it does not interfere with someone else's property or rights. Now, this does leave a lot of room for meddling in what your neighbours are up to, but we should wait and see the bill before reaching for the faux gras. We also need to appreciate that this reform is 18 months away and will be in place for less than a year before the next election. Some criticism is warranted. National and ACT have had 6 years to draft their RMA replacement. There are plenty of interested parties who would have contributed to this effort, and a bill should have been ready to present to a select committee in the first 100 days. As a court will be aware, Labor took so long with the reforms that the RMA that it only obtained royal assent in August last year and was repealed on the 24th. So there's no guarantee this government last 3 years given there's no guarantee this government last 3 years given it requires Mr. Peters to retain its majority. The longer the RMA replacement has to gain acceptance, the more durability it will enjoy upon a return to a Labor-led government. But Labor have their RMA bill already drafted and ready to go, that being the one Court and his mates deleted on Christmas Eve. So the article goes on. We're just going to see how that goes with regards to those changes. National has said in many forums that they're wanting to make things easier and more competitive, bringing in products that are at least as good a standard, if not better, than those that we currently rely upon. This should free up the market. Speaking of the market, this article from Susan Edmonds on Stuff says, life very difficult for everybody in housing market, QV says. The property market conditions are making life very difficult for everyone. According to QV, they say the property data firm has released its latest update showing the average home value has lifted 2.2% for the first 3 months of the year by its measure. It said the average home value is now 1.9% higher than the same time last year, but still 13.1% below the 2021 peak. They go across a few regions. They talk about quarterly growth, Queenstown at 2.7%, Wellington and Christchurch at 2% and 1.5% respectively, and a few areas where it's almost the same. Here in Manawatu it's slightly up, about 3%, and Palmerston North it's down a little. So QV Operations Manager James Wilson said the market was flat. He says we're seeing only modest movement across the nation, mostly up, but some down, which is a fair reflection of a housing market that is continuing to find its footing again against some pretty strong economic headwinds. They say, although the pendulum has clearly swung in favour of prospective purchasers with a relatively large number of properties on the market today, giving them plenty of choice and helping them to maintain downward pressures on prices overall, interest rates and credit constraints are continuing to make life difficult for everyone. Wilson said a recent influx of new listings onto the market had more of a cooling effect on the main centres, particularly in Auckland. It's also having a slight effect here in Manawatu as well. So he expects the trend to continue in some of the other larger cities over the next few months. Immigration, of course, is helping to fuel demand, particularly in Auckland, but it does filter through to this area somewhat too. So it's still unlikely that we'll see any strong value declines as we now start to move into the cooler months of the year. Of course, it's also equally unlikely that we'll see any sudden strong home value growth. But once again, flat is the best word to describe the market today and its trajectory, even with the recent reintroduction of 80% interest deductibility for landlords. And just on that, of course, that's looking at coming in early next year, in which case the financial equation for landlords to purchase and hold onto rental properties and adding to the rental market will become a lot better. So let's just have a little bit of a recap, courtesy of staff. Again, Susan Edmonds says, changes coming for landlords and tenants. Just to recap historically, there was a number of changes in the last few years that have caused concern for landlords. And of course, this flows on to change the market in a sense. For example, I have sold a couple of properties because they went from being a positive investment to a negative one in terms of finances. And as most owners, I own a small number of properties. Most owners own one or two. In fact, 97% of all landlords have three or less properties. So when you have to top up those properties out of your household income, there is that pressure to sell. And that was a aim of the Labor government. They hoped that landlords would sell properties and first home buyers would buy them. Now, that does not mean that there was an increase in any way in the market and or the size of the market, and that the fundamental problem of supply and demand doesn't change, and that there's still not enough houses. So what we've seen is, despite a bunch of changes, things being a little harder for landlords, a lot of costs, a lot of upwards movement in the market have meant that rents have gone up considerably over the last few years. So that leads us into this article. It says a bill will be introduced into Parliament next month, which will undo many of the changes to rental laws made by the last government. Housing Minister Chris Bishop said the changes to the residential tenancy market would help landlords back into the property market. Changes would include a return of 90-day no-cause terminations for periodic tenancies, so landlords could ask tenants to leave without giving a specific reason. That was a large reason why many landlords had left the market, was because of the fear that when they put tenants into a property, if they are bad tenants, they would not be able to get them out. So a number of landlords either decided to sell their property or just simply not give tenants a chance unless they were absolutely perfectly clear background checks. And let's face it, not everybody has those. Other changes, landlords will also only have to give 42 days notice when they want to move into a property themselves or have a family member move in or when the property is being sold. Tenants will be able to end a periodic tenancy with 21 days notice. And they're bringing in the landlord's ability to end a fixed-term tenancy at the end of the term without a reason. So provided they give enough notice, you've signed up for a year, they can end it at the end of that year. Now, this is a quote here by Chris Bishop, not my words, but he says, the previous government waged war on landlords, and many landlords told us this caused them to exit the rental market altogether. It caused worse outcomes for tenants, rents up by $170 a week, since 2017, so no small matter. The social housing waitlist increased by about 20,000 families and thousands of families living in emergency housing motels. Without sounding like a scratched record, again, the problem is not enough houses. Our government is making sensible pro-tenant changes to the Residential Tenancies Act to help increase the supply of rental properties. He said the government expected it would make it easier for investors to be part of the market and help to boost the supply of rental properties. Now, I agree with that, although there is a but. I agree. It will make it easier for investors to be part of the market. The difficulty there, again, is that, and that will help tenants, but the difficulty, is again, is supply and demand. But it would mean that investors may buy the homes of first home buyers who are upgrading or upsizing as their families expand and that sort of thing. We've heard from many landlords that without the backstop of a 90-day no-cause terminations are unwilling to take a chance on a tenant who may, for example, not have perfect references or a steady 9-to-5 job, and we've definitely seen that. This government is committed to ending New Zealand's housing crisis as part of its plan to get the economy back on track, restore law and order, and deliver public services New Zealanders deserve. They say to end New Zealand's housing crisis, we need to use every tool we have to increase supply. These changes, along with restoring deductibility for mortgage interest on residential investment properties, are part of the government's plan to encourage landlords back into the rental property market and to increase the number of rental homes available. And again, as I mentioned earlier, this is likely to come into force early next year. So, however, there are still a number of things holding investors back. The things like the loan-to-value ratios mean that landlords can only a certain number of landlords can lend to buy. There are things like the interest rates still being pretty high make it hard for landlords to justify purchasing a rental property. So there still needs to be a few changes, but some of the ones that, including the shortening of the bright line test, that is the ability for people to buy an investment property and sell it within a time frame or after a time frame and not pay tax on the capital gain, will attract more people into the market. So positive changes. What change will they have on rents? I don't think there will be enough new properties coming on the market to really create a situation where supply and demand equal out or supply overtakes demand, which would be good for tenants. So in other words, if there's plenty of houses to choose from, prices come down. Now, I don't think we'll get to that because of the large amount of immigration coming into the country. This final article, this is a word of warning if you are a purchaser of a property. This from Marty Sharp on Stuff. He says, woman loses $200,000 after failing to settle a property deal. So a woman who went unconditional on the sale of a Kapiti Coast property has learned the costly lesson and the perils of failing to come through with the money. The property was a lot in the planned Florian Kapiti townhouse development at Paraparaumu. Lots in the 64 townhouse development were listed for sale in May 2021. The owner of the property at the time, Macquarie Trustee Limited, entered a sale and purchase agreement with Georgina Watson the following month. No relation, by the way. The purchase price for the property was $833,000. A deposit of $83,800 was to be paid by June 16th, 2021, with the balance being paid on the settlement date, as is usually the case, of course. Watson paid the deposit and the agreement was unconditional from August 19th, 2021. Work on the development got underway in March 2022. The settlement date was June 20th, 2023, but she failed to make the payment, that is, the remainder of the purchase price. Macquarie issued a notice regarding Watson to settle by July the 20th, but again, settlement did not occur. A further urgent settlement request was made on August the 1st, but that also didn't occur. So on 31st of August, Macquarie entered into a new sale and purchase agreement with a new buyer who purchased the property for $702,000, and the agreement with Watson was cancelled. Now, just to go back in the article, and I'll just, scroll back up the screen. So she had bought it for $833,000, according to her contract. Macquarie sold it for $702,000. So here's where things get tricky for the buyer, Georgina Watson. So in September last year, Macquarie took court action against Watson. Macquarie's sole director and shareholder, Kurt Carrison, said the company had incurred a loss of $52,200, taking into Watson's deposit of $83,800, which it retained. So Kerrison said there were other costs, including $12,500 commission paid to a real estate agent. Of course, they have to pay that because they did the job and sold the place. $6,500 for marketing the resale of the property, $10,500 for furnishing the property for resale, and $5,000 for legal and council costs. He also claimed $36,000 interest on the unpaid portion of the sale price for the period in which settlement was not met. Some of you may or may not know that it's generally every day you delay settlement, there is a interest charged on the amount owing, which is something to be very aware of. The matter was heard by Associate Judge Andrew Skelton in the High Court in Wellington last month. Watson was not represented in court, so Skelton found Watson liable for damages resulting from her breach of the contract, a sum of just under $123,000 on top of the almost $84,000 deposit already paid, meaning the total cost of failing to meet the settlement came in at $207,000, and Watson couldn't be found for comment. So that's very sad. Very sad. I don't know enough about the situation to talk to it, but if you pay a deposit on a property, you need to, and go unconditional, you need to know that that finance is going to come through. Very risky if you haven't arranged that in advance. That's why so many banks pre-approve lending, so that you know that you're safe in the amount that you're offering on a property. So failure to settle, failure to go through with the agreement is something that is punishable financially. And as you can tell in that article, it also means a property can be resold and you can be up for costs. Doesn't happen immediately. I think there was a several months in that case, yet it can happen. So it's just a little word of warning here. It's been lovely having your company this week on Property Matters. And I'm Greg Watson. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for the team at MPR, Manawatū People's Radio. I'm wishing you all the best until next week. Have a great week.
If you enjoy this MPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.